Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. One of Alaska's most prolific climate communicators could lose his job if the Trump administration's proposed cuts to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration go through. The administration laid out a plan to slash NOAA's budget in a memo leaked this month. The draft cuts would eliminate several research institutes the agency funds in Alaska, including the Fairbanks-based Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy, or ACAP. That's where Rick Toman works. He's a climate specialist who's known as the state's go-to source for weather information. You've probably heard his voice.
This yo-yo weather can and does happen any time of year. Mount Spur west of Anchorage is showing increasing signs of erupting. Turned out that the 24-25 La Nina was a dud.
He hosts weekly radio spots for communities across the state and writes a blog covering timely topics like extreme weather, seasonal outlooks, and ice conditions. But Toman's salary is funded entirely by NOAA, and three-quarters of that is through the base funding that ACAP receives from an office that would be terminated if the cuts became a reality. He says cutting his interpretive services would leave Alaskans in the dark.
The weather doesn't care whether we're forecasting it or interpreting it or anything, right? It's going to happen, but we will be in a much, reduced position to prepare for it and respond to it.
John Davies is a retired seismologist and former state legislator in Fairbanks. He says he relies on Toman's reports as an avid gardener.
Right now, we're making a decision about when we should put our plants out in the greenhouse, and we're trying to anticipate when we're going to put plants in the ground.
He says that the long-range climate data Toman makes accessible to the public is invaluable. Staff at NOAA's Juneau offices and the White House declined to comment. Final funding decisions will be made when Congress votes on a budget in the coming months. Yesterday, the City and Borough of Juneau Clerk's Office certified three ballot petitions aimed at lowering local taxes in Juneau. That means advocates can soon start collecting signatures of support in hopes of getting the proposals on the municipal ballot this fall. KTOO's Clarice Larson breaks down what those could mean for residents.
The three petitions seek to cap the local property tax rate, remove sales tax on food and utilities, and make in-person voting the default again in Juneau. A Juneau advocacy group called the Affordable Juneau Coalition is leading the effort. Joe Geldof is a local attorney and member of the group. He also unsuccessfully ran for the Juneau Assembly 2 years ago. He says the purpose of the petitions is to make Juneau more affordable.
There's been a lot of discussion for a long period of time about how to do that. And the City and Borough Assembly and the city manager never seemed to accomplish anything on that.
The Juneau Assembly already considered removing sales tax on food a few years ago, but ultimately decided against it. The city currently taxes food and utilities at 5%. Geldof says removing that tax would directly lower people's bills.
Because it impacts every resident, and especially lower and moderate income.
But on the flip side, those taxes bring in a combined $10 to $12 million in revenue to the city each year. If voters pass the initiative, City Finance Director Angie Flick says it likely means the city would have to cut back on spending or reduce services to make up for that lost revenue.
That would be, you know, a sizable chunk of the city's budget and would definitely require the assembly to make some hard decisions.
The same goes for the petition to lower the mill rate. The city uses the mill rate to calculate how much property tax residents pay each year. Those taxes are expected to bring in about $63 million this fiscal year, which makes up roughly 40% of its general fund revenue.
While today those limits might be manageable, it really does handcuff the city moving forward as, you know, the cost of services likely increases. You know, it certainly could put the assembly in a place where they're having to make unpopular decisions.
Right now, the city caps the mill rate at 12 mills, but the petition would drop the ceiling down to 9 mills. While that could lower property taxes in the future for property owners, it again would likely come at a cost to the city. Geldof says that's the point.
They need to start taking a hard look at all the expenses they do and get back to funding essentials. How that plays out, of course, is going to be up to the assembly.
That leads to the petition to make in-person voting the default again in Juneau. Geldof says he thinks the change will make elections cheaper. The Juneau Assembly approved an ordinance 2 years ago that made by-mail voting the default for local elections, but residents can still vote in person at city vote centers. Last year, a group of residents tried to repeal that ordinance, but failed to gather enough signatures to get it on the ballot. This time around, the petition would instead amend language in that same ordinance to make elections poll-based again, instead of by-mail. The group will have until May 30th to gather just over 2,700 signatures for each petition to secure a spot on the local ballot this October. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And millions of dollars slated for child care funding were among the many budget cuts Alaska state senators made last week in an effort to balance the deficit. But advocates on the Capitol steps on Tuesday said those funds are vital to support families across the state. KTOO's Jamie Deep has more.
More than 100 parents, children, lawmakers, and advocates carried signs and babies outside the Alaska State Capitol. They're asking the legislature to prioritize child care funding. The rally comes after the Senate cut nearly $14 million in child care funding from the budget. Hannah Weed is raising two children and runs Tumbleweeds, a licensed child care facility in Juneau. She says the only way she could afford taking care of her younger child was to start a business providing child care at the same time.
I can't actually afford to stay home with him, but I don't have anywhere to send him. So thankfully, I have experience working with children, and that route worked for me, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Child care is part of a long list of cuts as the Senate works on drafting their version of a budget that balances a nearly $2 billion deficit. Advocates also pushed for supporting several bills to bolster several early childhood education and development programs. Blue Scheibler is the executive director for the Southeast Alaska Association for the Education of Young Children. She's advocated for child care support for years. She says it's the legislators' job to look for ways to make money to fund child care, like through taxes.
Parents are tired of having to, like, sing for their supper. We shouldn't have to beg and plead for these things. They're just basic things that every family needs to thrive in a state.
At a Senate majority conference after the rally, Fairbanks Republican Senator Kathy Giesel says she agrees with rally goers on the importance of child care, but the state can't afford to fund it.
The problem is we don't have any money. We've had to make serious cuts, and child care funding is one of them.
Giesel adds that advocates shouldn't give up as the Senate finds other ways to drum up revenue for the state.
We're not at a fiscal cliff anymore. We're actually falling over the cliff. And so what we're trying to do is be creative to find new ways and yet not place burdensome taxes on Alaskans that are struggling and businesses that are struggling.
The legislature is required to pass a balanced budget by the end of the session or face a state government shutdown. The last day of session this year is May 21st. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jamie Deep.
And across Alaska, hundreds of federal employees are losing their jobs. Diminishing the federal workforce is a central goal of President Trump's and a hallmark of the first 100 days of President Trump's second term. Alaska is especially reliant on federal jobs, so the impact here is keenly felt. While the loss is hitting home for some Alaskans now, Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports it'll be months before we can quantify that impact.
This was bird biologist Dan Ruthroff in July on the North Slope. A video shows him sitting on a camp chair. On his lap is a goose, feet side up. He reaches for a metal leg band.
92 is an adult male.
And with that, number 92, a black brant, is on his way. Ruthroff took an early retirement and is now listed as a former employee of the Alaska Science Center. That's a unit of the U.S. Geological Survey with offices on the Alaska Pacific University campus. This is not how Ruthroff wanted to end his 24-year career.
Years I had a lot of irons in the fire and many projects that I was still working on, and I'm limiting the fact that those aren't going to be able to happen.
He's among about 10 colleagues who quit in mid-April out of 62 people who worked in his USGS ecosystems unit. Thanks to the so-called fork in the road incentives, Ruthroff could retire early without penalty, so he feels fortunate compared to some of his coworkers. And he's sad for the science that won't be completed.
We believe in what we do, and we believe in the value that we bring to the public. So when that started being denigrated and undervalued, it became really difficult. And it's been a lot of anxiety at work as we started to recognize a lack of appreciation for this very basic research.
In total, about 15,000 Alaskans worked for the federal government when Trump took office this year. No one can yet say how many have since been fired or took incentives to quit or retire.
That has been a big question, a gaping question.
Brock Wilson is an assistant professor of economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage. He's been trying to track job losses.
What everyone wants to know is the magnitude, and that has been really challenging to make any firm conclusion about.
The state of Alaska says more than 230 federal workers have filed unemployment claims. Wilson says those might be some of the 1,400 probationary workers in Alaska. They were among the first targeted for firing. But he cautions the unemployment claims aren't all that indicative, since some of the probationary workers were rehired, some fired again. Wilson says that's just one moving piece that confuses the federal employment picture. Another, he says, is that people who took the fork in the road incentives are on a different path.
They may not necessarily be reflected in unemployment. In fact, they may have gotten another job elsewhere.
The key piece, Wilson says, will be payroll data. How many Alaskans receive federal paychecks now compared to a year prior? The government releases those figures about half a year after the fact, so it'll be a few months. As for the remaining researchers at the Alaska Science Center, more job losses are likely. The journal Science reports that the White House is expected to ask Congress to defund the entire biological research program at the U.S. Geological Survey, a move that was in the Project 2025 blueprint the Trump administration is largely following. Ruth Roth, the bird biologist, says some of his colleagues work on species with obvious economic value to Alaska, like salmon. But he says birds bring joy.
Certainly bird watching and hunting is a big economic driver, but I think it's very clear that we all just love birds.
He says the data he's collected over his career is archived. He hopes future scientists can use it to help maintain healthy bird populations. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is KTOO.